And welcome to episode 63 of the Brood Sages, Stormbound players with a head for the game. I am Freeloader, and with me as always are Sabaiku and Thomas. Sabaiku, how's it going tonight?
Fantastic.
And Thomas, how are you doing?
Pretty all right.
We are back. We're the Brood Sages, easily the second best Stormbound-related podcast in production. And as a reminder, you can always follow us at Brood Sages on Twitter. Or for all of you who remember back when the Brood Sages were an actual podcast, our email address is thebroodsages@gmail.com. But no one has monitored that for about a year. So if you have sent us an email, a big apology. This is a special reunion show. We are getting the band back together, Elwood, the band! How much Stormbound have we been playing? Let's start with Thomas. Thomas, how much have you been playing?
I was playing pretty heavily up until last February or so. I'm pretty sure I got one more first place rank later last year. Thank you. And then after that, things really started dying down for me, both between my house remodel as well as just the game just truly getting too stale for me. And so it was time for me to back off.
All right, fair enough. And Sabaiku, how much? I know you've been playing. You've made Heroes League every month, correct?
I have managed to make the Heroes League every month, I believe. I stopped my regular uploads to YouTube, I think, back in January or February. I do not necessarily play every day now, but I do try to at least get a win a day, usually a couple games in. And that's about it. And it turns out that's enough really to carry me just through Diamond and into mid-tier Heroes League. And I'm just not trying to compete anymore the way I used to.
And there you have it, folks. A win a day keeps the platinum away. Okay, so if we haven't been playing Stormbound, what have we been playing? I'll ask Sabaiku first. What have you been playing?
I've been playing Marvel Snap. It's what? A lot of fun. I know. Yeah, I got you into it also.
And me.
Oops. It's been quite the enjoyable game. I really enjoyed just playing with something that has a board, but not in the same way that Stormbound has a board. We can talk about pros and cons of Snap versus Stormbound another time. That's not really why we're here. We're here because we missed Stormbound and we wanted to talk about it.
Yeah. And Thomas, you've been playing it as well?
That is correct. I still do play enough games to retain my Diamond status every single month in Stormbound in case I ever want to try hard again. But other than that, it's been mostly Snap for myself, even though my overall gaming time is pretty insignificant in comparison to what it used to be back during my heavy Stormbound days.
I'm in the same boat. I just don't play anywhere near as much as I used to. But I did take on Snap. Sabaiku introduced me to it in December, and I took it as a personal challenge to at least make Infinite. We have all made Infinite, that's correct?
Correct.
Mm-hmm.
Correct.
So we've played that game enough to at least be somewhat authoritative on it. And I will say, I think from the three of us, Sabaiku has managed to find the best sort of moderation between the two games. I kind of just stopped playing Stormbound. I don't believe I queued into a game of Stormbound since either late November or early December of 2022. So I was gone for quite a while, but I'm happy to say that I am back, and I'm back in part because after hitting Infinite and Snap, I decided I don't like it. I just miss Stormbound. I love this game. But aside from that, Sabaiku, you've played both every week, right? Kind of, or at least every month.
I played pretty much both every day. At least probably that's true for about 4 or 5 days a week. Again, not a ton of each. I'm playing enough to make sure that I make Infinite in Snap and enough to make sure I make the Heroes League in Stormbound, but both of those are over a month. So, there's plenty of time to pace yourself. And as long as you're smart about how you play, not necessarily what you play. I've been playing the meme decks, but as long as you're smart about how you play, you'll do all right.
And Thomas, you've been just sort of treading water, staying in Diamond. What has that been like? Are you memeing it, or are you just sort of playing like a tryhard deck a couple of days a week?
It's kind of a mix of both. It's whatever the balance changes ended up being to try that out. There was one month where I needed to challenge Mr. P93 to a card that he thought was super weak, and I thought it was decent enough to be able to get through the Gathering Troops card, so I was playing that all this entire last month to get back into Heroes League. Once I got into Heroes League, I was like, I don't have enough time to continue pushing up further, but yeah, it's kind of a mix. All
right. Fair enough.
And now, Freeloader, you said you played all the way back to Heroes League from Bronze?
Yeah, that's so I started, I believe on the 16th of August, I started playing again. And from the 16th of August to, I think, last Friday, I went from Bronze 5 all the way up to the Heroes League. And I did it basically with a deck, which was an aggro winter deck. And unfortunately for me, because I hadn't played since last year, I did it with no cards introduced from 2023. I had none of the new stuff. And we'll talk about that journey up some more, because I think there was a lot of really fun insights and a lot of like tip of the hats to Sheepyard and Paladin. There was some really fun things that happened along the way that I was really impressed with. And then there were some other things that maybe deserve a little bit of criticism. So we'll get to that in a little bit. But first, I wanted to talk about, since we were last doing a podcast, Sabaiku, it turns out they've introduced a card or two. there's maybe a little too many to go through, but I think I could name them all in one breath. Either way, we won't bore you with that. But it's at least worth having a conversation about what has been notable in 2023 that's been introduced. I'll start with Thomas. Thomas, give me your top three most notable cards introduced in 2023.
I don't think I've got a top three. I do have at least top two. Vindictive Wrenches, for sure, is at the top there. Mm-hmm. And then I thought Ultrasonics were going to be a lot more powerful than it ended up being. It's a great card, but I thought it was going to be just completely over the top. So I'm glad to see that it didn't destroy the entire meta. And then I guess my third one would be Snowdrifts.
Okay, seriously, you're not going to mention Angelic Tikas, despite the fact that's all I see on Discord.
I haven't actually gotten a single copy of that card, so I never ended up upgrading it.
Oh, okay.
I can mention Angelic Tikas. It is a pretty fun card. I will say it is definitely very strong, definitely in my top three. I would have put Snowdrifts in my top three also. Playing a Winter Runners deck, I've been using Snowdrifts for defense in that. Mm-hmm. I tried putting Crystal Shields in, which was a very recent card. It same 6-mana slot figure, it gives you health. It does not do the job anywhere near as well. Snowdrifts is just really well done and very well balanced. I like that one a lot. But number one absolutely has to be the best card Shadowfin has ever had. Acid Greenhorns, just poison your own units, combo with Soap Cleanse, make a big board. It fills the hole in my heart that Bragdo left.
Well, that was last December. Sorry, I thought you guys were talking about since the beginning of this year. But yeah, if we were to include everything that we've talked about, or everything that we have not talked about since we've last gotten together, I would, yes, definitely agree with Acid Greenhorns, but then also Obelisk of Souls.
Obelisk of Souls I love so much that I just played that exclusively and hit top 10 with that deck just from sheer quantity of games. It was so good, and I'm so bummed out that they brought it back down in power.
So fun fact, I had stopped mainlining the game. I wasn't playing anything else at the time. I stopped having enough time to play Stormbound before Obelisk of Souls came out, so I don't remember when that was. And Sabaiku literally convinced me to soak all of my fusion stones into this card that I had not opened yet. And so I upgraded Obelisk of Souls from one copy all the way to level 5. I played 3 games with it, walked away from the game for another month or so, came back in and found it nerfed. Like, what happened?
Yeah. That's rough. Yeah. I will say, speaking of cards that we thought would do better. You know, Ultrasonics definitely was on that list for me too, Thomas. I just thought the sheer runner power would make it work, but it just wasn't quite strong enough. But two Ironclad cards, like actually all the Ironclad cards, really just none of them have made a big difference.
It's funny because we were excited about Cheesy Lures when it came out, weren't we?
That's a really good point. Yeah, I thought that was going to be on absolute top of basically every Ironclad list. I forgot about that card.
Mm.
You got Cheesy Lures, Frontline Engineers. I look at the list of cards. I really thought that one would be super strong. Just nothing. It was never really consistent, never really good.
So are we sure of a lot of that? Because I have a, and again, we'll get into this a little bit further down in the episode, but I have a theory that I just want to posit here for a moment, that I think a lot of these cards are actually better than the meta suggests they are, but there seems to be a, I don't know what you want to call a predilection to just sort of going with what somebody else found worked, rather than just sort of exploring. I think most of these cards are fine to good and not bad, which their play rate would suggest.
So I think Cheesy Lures is good. I think something like Frontline Engineers or Original Blueprints kind of just ends up being a pile of stats and not particularly impactful.
That's fair.
And that's kind of a criticism we've always had. It's really hard to design a card that comes in and affects the board and does something powerful without it being overpowered. But a pile of stats has just never been that overpowered card.
Yeah, I mean, I guess the only card that I can think of that was a pile of stats that really got some time in the limelight, right, was the Chonk Beam deck with the, and pardon me, I'm forgetting the dragon's name right now. But the giant
with Sunbeam.
No, not Sunbeam. The other one, the neutral.
Dansu, Dangerous Eaters.
Nope, not that one. The other neutral.
You're killing me.
The one with no movement. It's just a 5-mana
Flameless Lizard.
Flameless Lizards. Thank you. Right, like Flameless Lizards was just literally a giant pile of stats, and it had its time to shine. And I think Arthas would argue that it's still shining.
I mean, if you want to call Chonk Beam meta, I think Arthas would fight you on that. But it's true. But even that, it took a real lot of positioning skill to play that well, because you had to survive until you could build up the pile of stats.
Right.
I had success with slightly more aggressive versions of that. But the greedier versions, they were definitely inconsistent because of that.
That's fair. So Thomas, looking through this list and knowing that you have been one of the top players, you have a couple of top, number one finishes in the game, and looking at this list, do you feel like there's a deck in here that incorporates any of these new cards that you like see as a missed opportunity? Like, oh, I could have piloted a deck that was centered around this card up to the number one spot? Or do you see all of these as just sort of fine cards? If you have them, put them into a deck, but none of them are really changing play style or anything like that?
I don't see them changing the meta too much at all anymore. And I think the number one reason for that, I've had to kind of think about this for quite a while offline, and I think the number one reason why no new card is really going to be truly game-changing, but the fact that there's over 250 cards in the game now, like over the last year, they generally average about two new cards added into the game per month. And so over the last year since we've last met, that's only 24 cards added into the game. That's less than 10% of the total pool that exists.
Yeah, no, that's fair. I would argue that, like, at least for a little bit, Obelisk of Souls, for example, created a new meta deck, right?
I think most of the meta deck wasn't necessarily built around Obelisk, though. It just that it was good enough. I got to think of the right way to say this. It's not that the deck was built around Obelisk. It's that Obelisk was a strong enough control tool that it enabled you to play slower decks that were otherwise a little less viable.
played slower decks, though. I think you just slotted it into any deck if you were playing Shadowfen. And if you weren't playing Shadowfen, you were now playing Shadowfen.
Yeah, I think that's why they had to nerf it, right? Is because they made it powerful enough to shape the meta.
I think that like 8 of the top 10 decks that month were Shadowfen decks with Obelisk in it.
Those were good times.
I mean, looking at the list of cards in front of us, I can see one card that was a build around card that if you did not have it, you couldn't play that deck, and that's Acid Greenhorns, and that's correct.
Yeah, no, that's fair. That's very fair.
Everything else on there, you're right, is just if you have it, you can fit it in. Even Angelic Tikas, which you know the Discord complains about more than anything else, it's a fantastic card. It's very strong. If you don't have it, you can make do with other things. It's not the end of the world.
All right. And that brings me kind of into the next sort of main topic that I wanted to bring up. So we touched on it already. I decided this month after playing Snap and finally getting to Infinite and just sort of realizing that while that was a fun thing to do, I didn't particularly care for the game anywhere near as much. And I missed Stormbound. I got back into Stormbound. And I didn't have any of the new cards, so I just grabbed what I thought was a good aggressive deck, right? What I referred to as my Frozen Zoo deck. It's just a Zhivana Icicle Burst Mistwives deck. And I'm at the bottom of bronze because I haven't played in forever. I had to make a change. I had to take Ubis out because Ubis at level, you know, 2 is terrible and does not affect the board anywhere near as much as it needs to. And so I put in the pure meta card, Razor Sharp Lynxes, and I piloted that from Bronze 5 all the way up to the Heroes League. I lost once in Bronze, once in Silver, once in Gold, and then I lost 3 more times, or pardon, once in Platinum as well. So that's 4 losses up to Diamond, and then I lost 3 times in Diamond. So a total of 7 losses from Bronze 5 all the way up. And I mean, we'll share a link to the deck list in the show notes. There's nothing special about it. In fact, there's no Angelic Tikas. There's nothing new. It's just a aggressive mid-range deck, right? And that kind of got me thinking about, wow, I go into Discord and I see all this complaining about Angelic Tikas and how they're oppressing and how if you don't have it, you can't compete or... you know, it's just ruining everybody's day. And I kind of realized, Thomas, that like, I don't know, it was a, I don't want to call it easy, but it was not a difficult climb for me. And yes, I did queue into some bots. No, I did not queue into only bots. I queued into mostly players. And this is one of the areas that I wanted to tip my hat to the developers. My queue times, by the way, in Silver, Bronze, Silver, Gold, and not Platinum. My queue times were amazing. Press the button and I was in a game. Platinum was brutal. And we'll get into why we think that is. I was queuing into people, to actual honest-to-goodness players all the way up. I saw a lot of Malicious Finch, by the way, on my climb, which was cool, but also not a good enough card to be competitive. and here's what I wanted to ask. And I'll start with you, Thomas. Is it worrisome that having not been in the game at all for almost a year, I have no idea what the meta is. I have no idea what cards are strong or weak. I just grab a deck list I already have, make a small adjustment, not because of anything I'm encountering in the meta, but just because the level caps necessitated it. And I just fly through the ranks. Like, is it worrisome that you can... do that? Or is it reassuring that, hey, even if you wanted to walk away, you can always come back because it's going to be the same game when you come back?
Yeah, I think that's a neat concept. But overall, I think that's the reason why a lot of veterans end up walking away from the game is because it's too stale, that even after a year, it's still fundamentally the exact same thing. Take a look at a lot of card games like Magic the Gathering that has to introduce like rotating formats and massive ban lists to be able to keep the current state of the game, the current meta, fresh. Or a game like Pokemon, where they're constantly power creeping every new card that gets created in order to keep that new fresh meta. When you're keeping the same power level as cards get constantly released and You're not really changing anything else. You will eventually just be adding in a whole bunch of cards that don't do anything else to the game, and it will be stale. That's just the nature of how it goes.
Yeah, I mean, Subaku, so I saw a few Malicious Finch users on my climb.
And you beat them. So that, what does that tell you?
Well, that's fair, but what I wanted to get at was I didn't see much else. There wasn't a lot of adoption of new cards, on the climb. Like what I saw, most games looked like games I might have played a year ago.
Yeah, I think there's, like you said, there's pros and cons there. Definitely on the pro side for the developers, it means that A, they've done a pretty good job of balancing things to the point where most every card is viable. You know, obviously there's some of the pile of stats cards, like we just said, just don't work well, but for the most part, they're fine. You know, if you really want to play those frontline engineers, you can make a deck in it and it'll work, at least, you know, if the rest of the deck is well designed.
Fair enough.
And it also means that they're doing a good job of not making the new cards overpowered must-have cards, which I do think is important. You know, we've talked in the past about Stormbound's economy. It's not easy to keep up with a couple of cards every month and get them to level 5 right away. There are certainly those longtime players who can do it, but that's not 99% of the players. You know, like we learned from your climb up, most of the players are really in that silver, gold, platinum range, and you gotta cater to them a little bit and make things easy for them a little bit. So not having overpowered new cards that they have to sink their resources into does help them out some. But it is worrisome. It does mean that fundamentally you don't need to adopt new cards. You don't need to adopt new strategies unless the balance changes are so wild that they make a deck no longer viable. You know, recently Zuri was nerfed and I haven't seen anybody really trying it out anymore. I think that's probably right. I certainly haven't tried it out. It looks like it's going to be dead in the water now. And that kind of stinks, but that's in the wrong direction. That's taking cards out of the game. For me personally, I'd like to see the cards come into the game. If you're going to make everything on an even playing level, at least make them all powerful instead of making them all, yeah, they're fine.
Well, look, I will tell you, I don't think I saw more than 3 people playing Zhyvana, right? Like, it seems like the Zhyvana aggressive style decks are just not in vogue right now. And I can tell you from personal experience, there's no reason not to. It seems to be totally fine. But, you know, I don't know if that's a reaction to the Bladestorm buff, because I will say of the 7 losses I had, I believe 5 or 6 of them were to Bladestorm decks. Bladestorm was really not a good card for the deck I had built. But again, I had built it over a year ago when Bladestorm only did 3. So it was news to me. I didn't actually know about the buff. I just played into it and then suddenly found out. And I was like, oh.
Yeah, it's well, fine. That's a thing. Yeah. You know, to your point, if it's any sort of board clear that catches you off guard,
mm-hmm.
right, mm-hmm. that's when that kind of deck has trouble rebuilding. So that doesn't, we're not pointing out necessarily that Bladestorm is too strong here. It's just, you know, you didn't play around it.
Correct.
You lost to it, and that's fine. Like, you're playing an aggressive deck, and if a control deck clears your board, it's supposed to be able to take the win from there.
Well, right. And so it's really funny because I've actually gotten into a couple of arguments with people in Discord about that since. Now, that's been the most difficult card for me to play around as an aggressive deck, right? And I see that as exactly correct. That's what should happen. A big AoE that clears the board is what should wreck me. I'm an aggressive deck. I am taking that risk. I'm being super aggressive. I am playing a whole bunch of cheap cards. And the punishment for just vomiting out my entire hand every turn should be that my opponent can gain an advantage if they play a single card that clears all of that. So I'm happy with it. I think Bladestorm is a good thing in its current incarnation. it certainly gave me pause. Before that, I had only ever lost to one other deck, and the other deck I lost to was an even more aggressive swarm deck, right? So, go figure, it was in a Reckless Rush style build, which at this point is what, 2-3 years old? When did Reckless design the original Reckless Rush deck?
Easily 3 years ago.
It's got to be, right?
I was going to say 2019.
It very well, yeah, no, that's right. It was 2019 because he was teaching me. I couldn't play it worth a damn. I tried it. He shared the deck list with me in Discord, and I failed miserably until he coached me through it. And it was during the first couple of months before we made Diamond that he did that. So yeah, it was 2019. You're absolutely right. So this brings up a couple of questions. We've touched on a couple of points, right? How difficult it is to bring in a new meta-defining card because of adoption rate issues and the economy. And we've been playing another card game called Snap. And that game does something interesting that is something that we had theorized a while back, guys, about Stormbound, that the board represents this amazing strategic advantage in the world of digital card games. There's so many opportunities to be innovative and to make changes to the game, to the meta, by introducing different things to the board. And we've now seen a card game adopt some of those kind of concepts. What do we think? Like, at the end of the day, having now received real world experience playing in a game that can be like, oh, here's a board you didn't expect. Does this fit with your deck? Nope, too bad. Or yes, it does. Great job for including a card that takes advantage of this particular board. Do we feel like that's something that would still augment and improve Stormbound, or do we think it's just, well, it's cute, but it's not a thing? I'll start with Sabaiku.
Yeah, I would love to see this. We have talked about this in the past on the Brood Sages. Like, just please use the board. It's a resource. Take some risks and try some different things with it. The only brawl that I can remember where the board has been a significant factor is the minimal frontline brawl, where you start farther away from your base, so you have less distance to travel. That's a cool concept. But you could definitely try some other ideas out in brawl, see what works. What Snap does that I particularly enjoy is, in Snap, there are three lanes. Each lane has dozens, hundreds of possibilities for what its board can be. And the combination of the three makes each game feel really unique and makes you as a player think about what you have to play around. And maybe your deck is designed to work well with some of those lanes. Maybe your deck works terribly with some of those lanes. You have to adapt to the situation. I'd love to see some randomly generated garbage on the Stormbound board. I think it would make things interesting. Trap tiles is something that we've talked about forever. If you could have randomly generated tiles that do different things, and every time you go into a game, either they could be tiles you know where they are, so you can try to take advantage of them before your opponent does. Maybe it's tiles that are randomly placed on the board, so you don't know where they are. Make the games feel unique, because if the cards are feeling stale, you can still freshen it up this way without doing something that requires players to sink their precious resources into a new card.
Yeah, this is kind of one of the things that I wanted to touch on, Thomas. The idea that when you sink resources into a card and it gets nerfed, it's just a terrible feeling, right? Like, there went all my fusion stones. But in a situation where you sink your precious resources into a card, and instead of nerfing it, a board becomes the accentuated board. It's served 15-20% of the time, whatever the number is, that just isn't advantageous to the card that you just put your resources into. It's an effective nerf, at least temporarily, right? It dissuades you from playing that card or putting it in your deck because it's not a good combo. But at the same time, it doesn't have the same terrible feeling of like, oh, they just ruined the card I put all my my resources into.
Yeah, that's a great point. Back when you guys first kind of proposed this on the podcast, I was super against this general idea. I thought that ranked should just always be ranked so that people can really compete super competitively and knew what they were going to be getting into. But mm-hmm. After the game feeling so stale for me, and to your guys' point, even on this podcast, of it being away from it for basically a year and coming back, and yeah, it's still the exact same game, really kind of showcases that. So I would be more willing to come around to this idea, and maybe a silly example, but you had some frosting that you had upgraded, like let's go with the snowdrifts, and the spotlight board is at the start of your turn, frostings get one strength plus one strength, something silly like that, like to then try and keep adding that card that would have otherwise been not included because it recently got nerfed, continuing to add it to your deck. That does make sense to me.
Yeah, and I definitely do not want something as heavy-handed as some of the brawl modifiers. Like, I do not want a board that makes all toads cost two. Right? That's terrible. But what you need is a more subtle incentive for players to do certain things or act certain ways. Or you'll always get those creative players that use it in ways that you don't expect. You'll always get those players that queue up with a counter because they say, okay, a featured tile on the board is going to give Frostling strength, and I want to make sure that I can do something that plays against winter really well because I expect that. Encourage the creativity in deck building, and encourage the players to be adaptable. Like you said, Thomas, the game is very strategic and very predictable in a lot of ways, especially at the higher levels when you know what your opponent's deck is, at least 90% of your opponent's deck. You want to be able to have a surprise every game. And that's the kind of thing that keeps people engaged and happy with the game.
Yeah, exactly. I think you literally just hit on it, Sabaiku. Getting a loss or queuing into a competitive game and either losing or struggling to win, when your opponent has a card that you can't afford to get, feels bad. Even if you win and you're just like, oh my gosh, I won, but that, for lack of a better term, Angelic Tikas really just made it so difficult. You walk away from it not feeling like you did a good job even if you won. You walk away from it feeling like, oh man, I cannot compete at the highest levels because of my resources. Whereas queuing into a game and struggling because the board itself, something that neither you nor your opponent paid to have, it's just there and it's different and it's funky and it has a weird rule that you struggle to win at, just feels so rewarding to be able to say, well, I had a terrible deck for it. I had the wrong cards, but I still managed to figure out a strategy that brought me the W. Like that's a great feeling. And, to both of your point, the games feel newer and fresher because not because my opponent could afford to pay for new cards that I now have to play against, but because we both suddenly were faced with a new obstacle that we both had to deal with the adversity of, and I just happened to do it a little better, right? Like that's a good feeling, no?
Yeah, I'd definitely enjoy it. I think I've come around to it.
Sabaiku, we convinced Thomas. Is this not a job well done?
It took only about a year.
All right, so let's put a little bow on this, because I don't know how long we want to make this episode, but I do feel like I don't want to call anybody out, but there's a lot of complaining in the Discord server about new card A or new card B, and yeah, Angelic Tikas is one of those. How it's just ruining your ability to compete, and I hope we can all agree that one of the takeaways from this episode is it ain't the cards. Like, if you can put together and design a competitive deck and you don't need new cards to do it, and if you can pilot that deck well, you're fine.
Yeah, you might not be, you might not be top 100, but you know what? 99.99% of the players are also not top 100. I mean, you can still play the game really well and still play the game at a high level.
And still get all the rewards for the best sort of finishes, right? So if you find yourself stuck in gold or you know, platinum or whatever, you'll get through it. It's a learning process. Don't get frustrated. It is a you problem, but knowing that it's a you problem means that it's also something that you have the power to fix, right, Thomas?
100%.
Stop playing pirate decks. I faced more pirate decks than anything else on my climb. Please stop. They're cool. They're really funky. They don't win.
Well, hey, some players have the goal of playing fun cards, playing fun decks, and they don't mind what their rank is at the end of the season, and more power to them.
Right. No, that's fair. Hats off for the queue times to the developers. Silver, bronze, and gold were fantastic. Platinum was brutally, like, the worst thing I've ever encountered. It's worse than Heroes League for me. But that's a me problem.
Is that a you problem? Did you get a lot of bots in Platinum?
I didn't get a ton of bots in Platinum. I got more bots in Platinum than I got in gold, for sure. But Sabaiko, you figured out why this is. So real quick, why is it that I was running into so many long queue times?
I teed you up for it, but you passed it back. I don't know if this is true or not, but I suspect that in Platinum, where the card cap is level 5, the game was trying to match you up preferentially with players with a collection as high level as yours. And that's why the queue times were longer.
Yep. And it was borne out. If I saw an opponent that was base health 18, it was a bot. Like, I would know right away. It never queued me into somebody in Platinum at base health 18. It queued me into opponents that were base health 20, like I was. But if it couldn't find one of those, every base health 18 was a bot. So I think you were absolutely right on that. And then once I got into Diamond, it got better again. So that was great. But we've come back literally from the grave to say two things about this game. One, it's still a wonderful game. And I think we all still enjoy playing it fundamentally. Am I wrong?
No.
Still love it.
Mm-hmm. Still love it. But now, having spent some time in another game that created an actual physical manifestation of the thing that we had theorized, which was the board being an opportunity to introduce meta shifting and freshness to every match. Yes, I'm going to go out there first and say absolutely it works. It would be phenomenal in this game if it adopted it. And I hope the two of you jump on with me.
I'm right there with you. Because even Brawl doesn't do that. Even Brawl will keep the exact same modifier for the entire weekend.
And a lot of the modifiers in Brawl are not related to the board, but to the unit types, which means that it incentivizes every player to run a highly similar deck, if not the exact same deck. Like I said before, with the Toads 2 mana, you know exactly what your opponent is playing in that Brawl. They know exactly what you're playing, and there's no variation. It just makes it such a grind.
It is rough. Like, finding the right balance, and no one is saying that that's going to be an easy thing, but finding boards that have unique and sort of innovative interactions to the game is a challenge that is worth pursuing. And if you get it wrong, you get it wrong. That's okay. You're not serving up the same board every game. It's not a Brawl thing where every game has that same new rule, right?
And if you get it wrong, you can change it in the future. There's nothing blocking you into it.
Exactly. And it's not like a card thing where you have to shift it for everyone and then worrying about balancing it at every level. It's just that board is now only being served 1% of the time, or, you know, 0.5% of the time. Forget it happened.
Yeah. Snap has done that a couple times. They've decided that it wasn't fun enough for a couple of the different boards and just eliminated it from the game.
Please do that with more of the boards. I was driving in the car, I was talking to Sabaiku, and I just threw this one out there, right? Like, knee-jerk reaction. Imagine if you were in a situation where you're like, we need to find a way of getting more people to play freebooters. We just want freebooters to see a higher play rate in the game. It's too low for whatever reason. Just a board where the first card that's played every turn, the first unit played every turn, is sacrificed for mana. So you get its mana back times 2. So you pay 3 to play something, you get 6 back. And then you play freebooters. Like you're incentivizing everyone to just find a way to fit freebooters in their deck, because the rule of this particular board, which you won't see every time, but you're going to see it a decent minority of the time this week, you've shifted the meta. You've increased the play rate of a card that's not seeing any play right now. Ta-da, it's a success. And after 1 week, it's gone. You could even do it after 5 or 3 days, like take your pick. But the point is, the economy right now prohibits changes to the game impacting the game at a particularly quick rate, right? You need time to let it ripple through. And the board is one thing that just immediately impacts every game. And it doesn't matter what your library is. As long as you're smart about how you introduce those boards and how they're crafted, you're not necessarily focusing on one card that people don't have. You can make it just sort of a generally, oh, well, that's interesting, a kind of build a challenge. Thomas, do you think this would bring you back to the game and get you playing more?
I think there would be a couple of things that would have to change, but this is definitely on there.
Fantastic. And I am happy to say that I'm back. I'm going to be, this is the game I'm going to be mainlining from now on, which means I'll be playing it at least twice a week because that's all I've got for time. But it was great to be back, and it was fun to have the boys back for one more Stormbound episode. 63, guys. What do we think? This isn't necessarily our last, but it's probably our last for a while again. Yes, no?
I think that's fair to say, yes.
Maybe next year.
Maybe next year. All right. So that gives us a good kind of framework for where we personally, as the Brood Sages, hope that Stormbound moves. It might not be the direction it goes, but we just wanted to stick a stake in the sand and say this is our opinion on it. But I'll let us go individually then. So Thomas, specifically for yourself, what do you hope for in the game moving forward?
So when you'd asked if those changes would help get me back into the game, and I said that that would be one of the main things that would help me get back. The other main thing, I'm going to be slightly hypocritical for a second, but this is totally a conflict. What I don't like is how some of the games can take so long. I think that's partly due to the animations being so slow. So I don't like that. Like when you queue up a game, you basically have to book out like the next like 10 to 15 minutes to basically focus on the game. And that's a lot of time to invest. So 50% increase to the animations can cut it down pretty drastically. But the other half of the that coin is that games are also just too aggressive for my liking. There's too many small runners that can do 25% of the base damage. So there's not a whole lot of like true flexibility to what people can really freedomly play. So even if people had 21 base health at max level, that would be a drastic change to the game.
Okay, that's honestly not where I thought you were going when you were saying the games were too long. I thought you were going to ask for 15 base health in the Heroes League.
Oh, gosh.
Make it faster, please. Make it faster, please, and then make Blade Storm cost 2.
No, but that's how I'm being like hypocritical, that the games take too long, but they're also just too aggressive. So I think it's mostly due to the animations and the actual gameplay speed itself.
Okay. All right. And Sibaiku, how about you?
It's funny that you said that, Thomas, because I'm also going to say something hypocritical with mine, because I brought up the economy and how difficult it is to level up new cards. And my closing thoughts here, my advice is to bring in more new cards and bring them in faster. Don't be worried if there are complaints. Don't be worried about if they're too strong. Don't be worried that players can't collect all of them. Just accept that players can't collect all of them and make it clear that's the intention. Make players choose cards that they're interested in, and then they'll play cards that they're interested in, and be more aggressive with buffs and nerfs. Try to shake up the meta that way. I think that we're in a good spot, like we talked about earlier in the episode, where all the cards are fine, but I don't want to play a game where all the cards are fine. I want to play a game where all the cards are awesome. Make them all really strong, and if you overbuff something, bring it back, nerf it back. Don't be afraid to do that, but take risks in that way. At least that helps the game always feel fresh, always feel interesting.
So for me, I think I'm going to side with Sibaiku here. Take bigger risks. I've been thinking about it, and like one of the cards that I wish existed was I think there's a total of six that you can make, or seven. I wish there were legendary cards that would, while this is in your deck, allow you to play, to put cards in your deck from two different factions. We don't need all of them, but just pick a couple that you're like, oh, you know what? Shadowfen and Ironclad are both in real trouble right now. Here's a legendary that lets you play Shadowfen and Ironclad cards together in a deck. I mean, something like that, just huge risk for sure. But wow, that would suddenly feel like a completely different game. And you don't need to introduce legendaries for every possible iteration of it, but just something big like that, just a fundamental change to the game where suddenly it felt so different from what it is right now would be great. The play of the game is fantastic. The board is a great thing. And again, I'll just mention it one more time. Please use the board as an asset. But yeah, I think Sabaiku's right. Take some bigger risks. It's okay if a week later you have to nerf it or just delete it from the game. You know, Warsong Commander used to be a hell of a card in Hearthstone. And I don't think anyone even knows what it is anymore. So it's okay if it has to get nerfed to infinity. But taking the risks is a great way of bringing excitement back to the game. So that's our big message for tonight. The game is actually still pretty balanced. Maybe Shadowfen and Ironclad are a little behind, as people are complaining on Discord. But also, if you just play good cards, you're probably in good shape. And get out into it. So that's going to end the main portion of this episode, which means it's time for me to remind you to please contact us, preferably in our channel on the Discord server, because we're not really checking our email address anymore. That's the only place we're going to see it. And that's going to do it for this episode 63. For Sabaiku and Thomas, I am Freeloader. We are the Brood Sages, reminding you to stay hydrated.